This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We're back with more Judson Richards on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
All right, with you for one more hour here on 670 The Score. Again, we'll get back to the Bears. It is Patriots week. This is really the last time for the Bears where they have a... I won't call it a gimme for any games, but the Patriots 2-7 as of now, they would have the number one overall pick in the draft. We will talk about, is the seat hot for head coach Matt Eberflus? That's coming up shortly, but right now, oh, it is so good to talk to our next guest, one of the best booths in all of Major League Baseball, Mark Grant, Padres color commentator, the pride of Joliet and JCA, the unofficial mayor of Alpine, California. Mud, good to talk to you. How are things?
Hey, well, Judd, I'd rather be talking to Layla Rahimi.
That's right. You do know Layla. No. When's the last time you talked to Layla?
I do. Layla's great. She worked for us here in San Diego on Fox Sports and was our sideline reporter. She's a good egg. She's great. We keep in touch. But no, honestly, Judd, I am so happy for you. You know, you lived in Alpine. We were friends. We were neighbors. And I saw you grow as a broadcaster here in San Diego and now in the Windy City, which I love, and you know that. And I'll tell you what, the Score, 670, they're very lucky to have you, man. You're in the right chair. You're right where you belong right now, my friend.
Mud, I appreciate you saying that. That means a lot. Now, when Layla was covering the Padres, were the two of you both covering Will Venable, a young Padres player?
Yeah. How about that? It's amazing, Judd, because – first of all, I love Will Venable. I knew Will. I knew his dad. I played with his dad in spring training, Max Venable, when I was with the Giants farmhand when I was first drafted in 81. Max had been in the organization for a while. I think late 70s, he signed, 79 or so. Max is about 6 or 7 years older than me, but played with him in spring training, and then he went on to other clubs. But, yeah, I knew Max. We played in instructional league together. And I'm sure I saw Will running around when he was a little kid. He was born in 82, so he was very, very, very young. But I know Max and Molly, his parents, great parents. And I'll tell you what, I know you're going to get into the whole dynamic, but you're not going to find a finer human than Will Venable. I'm telling you, folks. He's class. He's a great kid. I think he's got the great mentality, the great mindset to be a really, really good manager. And I know you've talked about it, but, you know, the challenges that the White Sox went through this past year, he's ready to tackle those. And I think he's a very good choice for the South Side.
You know, he was on the station earlier this morning. I was struck by just how youthful he sounds. He's 42 years old, so he is young. But, you know, he's going to need that youthful kind of energy taking on the White Sox that just lost 121 games last season. But, you know, when you cover these guys, I even think back then, listen, obviously he's a Princeton grad. Baseball is in his blood with his dad, as you talked about. Bears are in his blood a little bit. His brother played a season for the
That's
Bears.
Right.
Yeah. But was he one of those where you may have discussed off air, okay, like this is a guy who will probably – be filling out a lineup card one day?
It's a good, yes. He had the great attitude. He's got the great baseball mindset. He's got the great baseball IQ. And Judd, the thing that sticks out for me is, you know, Will went about his profession as a pro. You know, he doesn't have that like rah-rah type of attitude as far as over the top. He's even keeled. And I think that's one of the main things that a really good manager needs is not too high, not too low. You know, he was a pro at his job. And when you coach the big leagues for a long, long time, and when you are a bench coach for Bruce Bochy for the Texas Rangers, I mean, you know, William is a sponge, and I call him William because it's kind of an inside joke because Molly, his mom, when I talked to Molly when he was with San Diego. I said, hey, you know, how's William doing? You know, did you talk to William? So it was kind of like, so I call him William to his face. But anyway, I think you knew that to when, you know, he became a coach. But as a player, you know, I kind of think it's tough sometimes. You talk to catchers who are captains and backstops and are in charge behind the plate. But, you know, Will, he was always a smart, heady type player. And I think that was the one thing that really stuck out to me to where, yeah, he'd be a very successful coach and a manager someday.
I think about who I would be looking for as a general manager. Now, I'll be honest, I thought that Chris Getz hired over his head a little bit. I thought it may be more difficult to find any popular candidate for them to get Will Venable after losing 121 games. But, you know, if I'm thinking about who do I want as my manager, it's not just about who can lead us back to winning. You've covered a lot of bad teams. You're currently covering one of the most exciting teams in all of baseball in San Diego with the Padres, but you have covered a lot of bad teams. Will is also going to have to teach them somewhat how to lose before they get to winning, right? Like there's an art to that as well.
Yeah. There's a lot to unpack there and I'll try to condense it. And when, you know, I was thinking about this before we talked tonight, I think the one thing Will is going to have to do is this, is maintain or try to get a culture in that clubhouse to where, hey, it might be a tough year, probably going to be another tough year next year, but come to the ballpark with the mindset that, hey, we can get a little better each and every day. Don't try to be the Pollyanna guy and say, hey, we're going to win 100 games this year. No, it's going to be a learning curve. There's going to be a lot of bumps in the road, but try to avoid having those guys on the team. And you know what it's like, because, you know, you played pro ball before. You don't want those cancers in the clubhouse when there's something going on with a club that has 121 losses. You like I said, there's a fine line. You don't want to be that Pollyanna guy coming in pom-poms each and every day, you know, whatever. But I think when you act in a certain way, you play in a certain way, you go about your business in a certain way to try to play things and do things right, I think that says a lot. And then just let the cards fall where they may. Just you know, go about your business in a positive way and try to avoid the negativity. Because I'll tell you what, when you're playing on a bad team, the last thing you want is hear the negative thoughts, the negative comments, the negativity in a clubhouse. And I think that's one of the things that Will bring to try to maintain that positive attitude, even though it's going to be a rough year. But hey, let's look ahead the short term, the task at hand, and take it play by play, inning by inning, and take it from there to keep it positive.
Were you surprised at all that he accepted this job for his first go-around for a guy that was kind of heading down the path of being a popular young manager?
Good question, because this is going to be a real, real big test for William.
Yeah.
But you know what, though? Knowing him, I think he's got the attitude to bring it on. He's got that bring-it-on attitude. And knowing him, I mean, we're not best friends, but I know him well enough to where he's the type of guy that would take that challenge. And it goes back to my point earlier, like I was talking about, being a coach of the big leagues for the Cubs, being on the staff with Bruce Bochy. Believe you me, you know, I know Bruce Bochy, you know Bruce Bochy, and if there's a guy that, you know, Will could learn from and learn a lot in a short time being there with the Rangers, it is with Bruce Bochy. So I think that he's going to, you know, there's going to be a lot of trial and error. There's going to be a lot of tough times in that dugout decision-making. But I tell you what, when he's been where he's been on the coaching side and under a guy like Bruce Bochy, I think he's in the right mindset and he is set to take a job like this. I think he's willing. He's got the really good attitude to accept the challenge.
The pride of Joliet Catholic Academy, Mark Graham, Padres color commentator with us. That's right, Mud. Are you what, number three on perhaps the most popular or the most famous at JCA athletes behind
I think
Tom Thayer?
Top 100. I think I'm, yeah, out of the top 100, I'm probably 101.
Come on.
We've got
number
Mike
nine
Allstott.
Overall
we've
pick got, to Major League Baseball in the draft. Yeah. Mike, give yourself a little love.
Well, yeah. We've got Mike Allstott. We've got Mike Tom Allstott. Thayer, Terry Gannon.
Oof.
I can go on. We got, who else do we got there? George Mikan.
John Stachowski. That's my father.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, throw him in the mix. But no, I could go on and on. Tom Thayer, as you mentioned, Tommy's a dear friend of mine. Watching him play at Joliet Catholic, then on to Notre Dame, and then, of course, on the 85 team. So, no, I tell you what, Judd, it's a great city, man. I love Chicago. Joliet's great. Very proud to be from there. I was born in Aurora, lived there a year. Then my parents moved to Joliet. And I tell you what, great childhood, nothing but great memories. It warms my heart to be talking to you and on the airwaves in the great city of Chicago.
Mud, can I tell you that Juan Soto has been making me think about Jeff Kent?
Right.
Could you guess why?
Well, was he washing his truck and he broke his wrist or something?
No, that wasn't it. Jeff Kent's best numbers was when he was hitting right in front of Barry Bonds. You were never going to you were never going to get that good of a Jeff Kent without Barry Bonds behind him. So when the Padres,
and you know what, absolutely, and you know what, that reminds me of a story. I remember talking to Rich Aurelia when he was on that team, and he had Bonds and Kent and those guys. And I tell you what, Rich was like, "Oh my gosh, you know." Batting where he was in the order when you had Bonds there, and say he was the happiest guy going to the ballpark each and every day. So, yeah, keep an eye on Juan Soto. What's going to be happening there in that free agent sweepstakes?
Well, so my point is, because you watch Juan Soto play for a season plus, and he is 25 years old. He is great without Aaron Judge, but he also just had the best lineup spot, much like Jeff Kent had with Barry Bonds, with Aaron Judge hitting behind him. So, are you going to pay for a guy that you may not necessarily get with the numbers that he had with the New York Yankees, or is he just ultimately that good where he will become a $600 million man?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. I think he's going to get his money. He's going to get paid. It's going to be one of those situations where, I tell you what, there's going to be a few teams and that go after him, but whoever gets him, I tell you what, no matter where they put him in the order, whoever's going to be in that lineup and hitting in front or in back of Juan Soto, they're going to be the happiest guys going to that ballpark, I'll tell you that.
What was it like to watch him every day?
You know what, Judd? It was fun to watch. It was a guy who's got power. He's got great command of the strike zone. He doesn't strike out a lot. He walks a lot. You know, it's the whole package. We can talk about this game and hitters in the game of baseball through the years, and it's like, okay, the guy was like just a power guy. You know, Bonds was that guy. If he probably took a pitch, it was probably a ball, depending on what the count was. Maybe it was just, you know, making the guy work a little bit. But I'll tell you what, when he started, I saw him in San Diego, you know, when he goes to left field, left center field, and with some pop, especially Yankee Stadium in that ballpark, that's a ballpark where you can do stuff like that and slug big time. But he's got everything going for him when it comes to be a big league hitter, every aspect.
Yeah, he'd look great at Wrigley. I don't know how realistic it is, but those eight-win players certainly would be nice. Mud, I can't thank you enough for doing this. It's great to hear your voice. Always enjoy talking to you. You and Don Orsillo, absolutely one of the best in all the big leagues. Thanks for your time tonight.
Judd, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. And you know how to get a hold of me. If you ever need anything, let me know. And a big howdy to all the people there in the great city of Chicago and listening down in J-Town. Love you. And, be good. Peace and love. Peace and love.
Thanks, Mark. All the best. That is Mark Grant, again, the pride of JCA, Joliet Catholic Academy, the unofficial mayor of Alpine, California there, Padres color commentator. Enjoyed that. Something that has not been as enjoyable is watching Matt Eberflus make his way through his third year as leading the Chicago Bears. We have been talking about it all show, 312-644-6767. We know it is election night. It's been hard to keep Alex's attention because it is a major night. I know that. But we've been asking you, kind of in line of the election, what is the approval rating for you, for head coach Matt Eberflus? 312-644-6767. Also, what will it take for him to be back in 2025? Does he need to make the playoffs? What does he need to do in the NFC North? How can he survive this gauntlet as the team had another meeting this week to discuss how things are going? 312-644-6767. We also have been wanting to try out a new feature that you can find on our app, the voice message, again, available on the Odyssey app, that allows you to record and send a message directly to the station. We found a good one. Neil sent us a message. Here's Neil.
I think Eberflus needs to make the playoffs and win a playoff round to be the head coach next year for the Bears. Otherwise, fire him and get somebody else in.
Well, there he is, direct and to the point. Has to make the playoffs. I don't know how realistic that is. And again, 4-4, it's not a great place to be. It's not the worst place to be. But we all have to take it into consideration that the Bears have the most difficult schedule for the rest of the way. I just don't know when you say, can Matt Eberflus outcoach Matt LaFleur? Matt LaFleur had the youngest roster in all of the NFL last year and was a play or two away from going to the NFC Championship game. If you just say it out loud, does Matt Eberflus have a chance to outcoach Dan Campbell? Say what you want about all of the knee biting, but Dan Campbell has assembled the best team in all of the NFL. And oh, by the way, that the Bears still have to play them twice. And we just spoke to Mark Grant in San Diego. Speaking of another guy, San Diego State University, Kevin O'Connell with the Minnesota Vikings, with what he's been able to do with Sam Darnold and the way that that team has been playing, they still have to face all of those teams twice. And oh, by the way, the 49ers are still on their schedule. Christian McCaffrey is back to practice. The 49ers are getting more healthy. And they've got the Seattle Seahawks, who are 4-5 on a Thursday night game. So if that is what it takes for him to keep his job, well, it's going to be a tough row to hoe, especially with Caleb Williams trying to get your young rookie quarterback up to speed. 312-644-6767. Cole is with us in Chicago. Cole, what's going on?
Hey, so I think the most important thing for this, like, next postseason, or maybe we can do it with the, you know, trade deadline, but we need a linebacker who's going to, like, break through the line and kill the quarterback every single play. We need a guy like that.
Every single play, listen, one of the strengths of this team ultimately is their linebacker core. That's tough coming off of the Cardinals game with how much TJ Edwards, Tremaine Edmonds struggled. But again, linebackers is not what I'm concerned about. If you want to go safety and the health of Jaquan Brisker, his concussion issues is something to be legitimately concerned about. Kyler Gordon getting over a hamstring injury with the way that he plays, that's something to be concerned about. Right, there are a lot of injuries. Not having both tackles for this team is something to be concerned about. The offensive line in itself, that is something to be concerned about. 312-644-6767. The linebacker core isn't necessarily one for me. Alex, for you, what can Matt Eberflus do? I don't know if more meetings is the answer. It feels like they're trying that one out. But I don't know if he's going to be able to salvage this thing.
Yeah, well, the question does ownership give him another year, whether we like it or not?
Right.
I feel like we're having this discussion of what can he do to get another year in our minds. Like, what?
That's a good point.
Like,
so you're saying he's not on
ownership.
You're saying he's not on the hot seat at all.
In my opinion, I would have gotten rid of him last offseason. So I am past this point because, like we're going to talk about later with Ben Johnson.
Right.
You have a chance to go out there and hire a top-level offensive coach, young offensive-minded coach, to help your young quarterback develop. And if you talk about the gap between the three coaches in the division and what the Bears have right now at the head coach and the coaching staff,
yeah,
at all of those positions, the golf is just, it's the Grand Canyon.
Right.
You're never going to be able to overcome what is in your division if the coaching gap is that big. So I struggle to find a scenario where if I'm making this decision, would bring him back, because I kind of already moved on. But the question is, how do the McCaskies feel about him? And if they like him, are they going to bring him back if he goes, say, 8-9?
The other three NFC North teams have competitive and very competent head coaches. The Bears have an overpaid defensive coordinator calling plays. That's what they have currently. And what I could not envision at all would be for the Bears to fire another offensive coordinator and think that they would let Matt Eberflus then hire his third OC. You just wouldn't do that. And what will it take to get the best offensive coordinator on the market? You got to make him your head coach. That's what it comes down to. That's why it feels impossible for Matt Eberflus to run this gauntlet of the rest of the season and be the Bears coach in 2025. Because the best thing that you have going for you, and I don't care about the last two games, there was nothing that Caleb Williams has done this year to make me think that they did not make the right choice with the number one overall pick. I'm not worried about Jaden Daniels. If Jaden Daniels goes on to win a couple Super Bowls, okay, we'll revisit this conversation. But 8 games in, not even halfway through the season for both of these quarterbacks, there was nothing that makes me feel like the Bears did not make the right choice at number one overall, not at this stage of the game. So if you are going to put him in the best place to succeed and you need a new offensive coordinator, then you've got to go out and pay for the best OC who ultimately wants to be a head coach. Why? Because you make the most amount of money. 312-644-6767. John is in Wonder Lake with us on 670 The Score. Hey, John, what's going on?
How are you guys?
We're doing great.
Good. I called last year about this time, a little bit later, when they were deciding to keep Justin Fields or not. And my justification was keep him, but escalate the front line. Back in the day when we had an army and we battled the field, you have a front line to protect whom? Your captain, your guy on the horse that will lead you to whoever. The same thing is going on this year. Get people up. We need to fix the front line to protect the quarterback. We're in the same position now. Do you know what I mean?
I do. Yeah. John, thanks for the call. It seems so bizarre that your general manager, who is a former offensive lineman, the one area where he did not spend enough money, and by the way, made a very poor decision in Gardner Davis, that seems to be the biggest issue, especially while drafting a number one overall pick and investing virtually, you know, his job, Ryan Poles' job is relying on how well Caleb Williams does. That's as simple as you can put it. And so for him to run out the offensive line that they have run out there is head scratching, especially with the amount of other things that Ryan Poles has done so well, including the trade with the Carolina Panthers. But we'll have to wait and see. We'll continue to take your phone calls on that, 312-644-6767. Alex was at the Bulls game last night. We'll get his thoughts on how things looked. Does the NBA have a style of play crisis that the Bulls are now a part of? We'll get to that next on 670 The Score.
We're back with more Judson Richards on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
With you all the way to 9 o'clock this evening, and talk a little NBA here. We will also get back to the Bears. There was something that Patrick Manley said on 6-7 The Score today that was concerning, to say the least, as we continue through this NFL season. The Bears are 4-4. They've got the 2-7 Patriots. This will be their last chance at any sort of a get-right game before they get back into the NFL. Or that NFC North schedule that is going to be so daunting for them. You heard the Bulls last night, came up short against the Jazz, heard it right here on 6-7 The Score. And I thought that this was really interesting because the Bulls have adapted a new style of play, right? And their new style of play is actually just a modern style of play. It was very much a half-court offense last year with DeMar DeRozan and how he likes to operate. This year, it is vastly different. Don't forget, this was a team that was in the bottom third of points scored, field goal attempts, and three-point attempts last year. That is drastically different, right? They are playing more like everybody else is playing. But Nick Wright, noted best friend of Danny Parkins, same with Fox Sports. This was on Nick Wright's podcast. This was after the beginning of the season, just watching the way opening night looked for the NBA. This is what Nick Wright said.
At its core, the NBA is at its best when dudes are flying over people, meeting them at the rim. That is when it's at its best television product. A bunch of finesse guys hanging out at the three-point line, hoisting 30-footers, is not good TV. And everybody is damaged if the TV numbers, if the ratings, if the interest goes down. You are not lifetime entitled to a top spot in the American consciousness. Ask boxing, ask horse racing, ask baseball post-strike, ask hockey anytime in the last 30 years. You're not guaranteed it. And you are going down a path where the games are less compelling television and the fans are worried, do the players even care?
By the way, Nick's point about do players even care, that was when Zion Williamson, Joel Embiid, and Kawhi Leonard did not play on opening night. We will ask you, what do you think of this style, not only of the NBA, but also the new style of the Bulls? 312-644-6767. Now, Nick made the point that they make all their money by way of television ratings and what he tuned in to see. And this was also opening night where, remember, you know, the Celtics, they tied the record, and for 8 minutes, they could not make a three-pointer. So that was somewhat of a laughable affair to begin with. But the style that he says is now good, Bulls fans are saying, well, at least now we're playing the modern style where you can't regularly be attempting the least three-pointers in the NBA and think you're going to have a chance. The Bulls right now, they are 11th in points scored. They are 9th in field goal attempts, and they are 3rd now in three-point attempts as well. They may not be great this season. They may not be good at all, and that may be by plan, by the way, for that protected top 10 pick because, again, the Bulls are 3-4. It's looked a little bit better than we thought, but is a very new style of play. Alex, you were at the United Center last night, right? How was your time at the UC, and what do you think of this new-look Bulls team? Was it fun for you? Was it aesthetically pleasing at the UC?
It is how it usually is. You know the dinner theater crowd. I'm not going to get into yeah. into all that, yeah. but we saw hints of it last year from the Bulls, where second half of the season, they started moving the ball a little bit more, and everybody is crying for them, shoot more threes, and it's happening. I just think that this is where basketball is. It's
right.
Justin, we just talked to Mark Grant. You mm-hmm. you know baseball, and baseball was the first sport to really get into the probabilities and the numbers. And yeah. when teams, magically found out that 3 points was more than 2 points.
Right.
I just don't know how you go back from that.
Right. And speaking of baseball, Nick Wright brought it up that baseball made some very, very drastic changes. The NFL has been brilliant at their changes. If they have an idea, they do it. If they don't like it, they just remove it. Baseball was very, very stuck in their ways. And then they finally said enough is enough. Theo Epstein has a ton to do with the Red Sox winning World Series. He's a ton to do with the Cubs winning World Series. And he has a ton to do with Major League Baseball being far more digestible because of the pitch clock and moving the game along and decisions that they've made. And so Nick Wright was challenging the NBA to consider, you know, taking away the corner threes, which is not a new idea, and drastically changing the game. But you're right. They need to do what everyone else is doing until those rules change. This is going to be the style of play that we're going to see. As far as guys driving the lane and dunking, we still see that. The one thing that I don't love about that is that often leads to palms up guy. The guy who is constantly complaining about not being fouled. The one thing about more three-pointers is it does seem to be less guys that are just begging for fouls, which I find to be one of the worst parts of the NBA. You know, the Bulls, the last 3 years that I've watched them, they're not necessarily inability, but their disinterest in attempting three-pointers actually led me to want to learn more about the importance of three-point shooting. There's a great book called Spaced Out that was written specifically about why the three-point shot is what it is and why the game has changed so drastically. And in that take from Nick Wright, it was an 8-minute piece from his podcast, it stemmed from a conversation with Daryl Morey, who is now the president of basketball operations for the Philadelphia 76ers. But Daryl Morey, in 2007, when he was leading the Houston Rockets, along with Van Gundy, was the coach there, they somewhat, as they were going over their analytics, they found that their most successful play was one that they dubbed random. It had no design to it. It was strictly about getting down the floor as fast as you can and finding an open shooter. Because what is the greatest mismatch you can have in basketball is an open shooter. So this half-court offense that they were playing, as DeMar DeRozan was getting set up and moving the ball as you allow the defense to then get set, this 5-on-5 that the Bulls were doing was archaic as your leadoff hitter getting on in the first inning and then bunting him over to second. That is how archaic it felt that the way that the Bulls were playing. So as this quote-unquote random play that they found was working so well, the mismatch is you get down the floor, there is three of you, and there are two defenders, and you find an open shooter, and you shoot it, right? Billy Donovan said it earlier this season that the best shot they're going to get in the first 7 seconds, and the next best shot is going to come in the next 7 seconds. And that is not playing 5-on-5 basketball. The first 7 seconds is not let's get set up as we allow the defense to also get set up. So Nick Wright may not love it, and the NBA may need to get creative and changing the way that they have the arc or the three-point attempts. I don't know, maybe they get creative enough where they only allow you to attempt so many three-pointers a game or attempt so many each quarter if they believe that this is enough of a problem. But as of now, as a Bulls fan, I think you just need to celebrate that it's current, that it's modern, right? You saw them play last night. Now, again, they do not have a great team anytime Zach LaVine is not on the floor.
Right.
Who has multiple injuries already. That's not a great sign, especially if they're looking to trade him. But you remove Zach, and this becomes somewhat, you know, of a very, very lackluster team.
Definitely. I feel like they're trying to implement this system and grow with the young core that they're trying to assemble,
sure,
that they're patching together, and Coby White is and Zach LaVine are kind of running the show. But yeah, I think that when you sign Nikola, or you re-sign Nikola Vucevic,
yeah,
you're hindering yourself from being able to fully go to that modern style of basketball.
Although, interestingly,
and he's fine, but yes.
Yeah, Vooch has played the best basketball to begin the season for
Agreed.
The Bulls. And he is decent in the fact that he can be a trailer. Even if he's late down the floor, he still is a very, very willing and smart passer. And I don't like him taking as many threes as he's taken. It seems like since his percentage has gone down, he is taking less. All I know about this season, I don't know who you want to see more of, Alex, but all I ask, I want to see more Montis Bouzelis.
Absolutely.
His game, it is raw. He is just 20 years old. He is thin. He gets pushed around. But you know it when you see it. And although it looks like he doesn't belong yet, he still somewhat looks like he belongs. So as they head into this modern style of basketball, and as they find their way through whoever, as they try to figure out who is going to be the core moving forward, you almost have to hope that they lose some games so they can protect that top 10 pick, right? But give me more Montis. I was disappointed when they sent him down to the G League, and I'm glad that they brought him back. Now, he's only brought back because Zach wasn't able to go. But play those young guys. Play more Jalen Smith, but you have to just be excited that they are playing a modern game of basketball. We don't have to like it. You don't have to like the way that it looks. But if you care about winning, you can't be attempting the least amount of three-pointers and think that you have a chance to win. Again, this was a team last year, bottom third of points scored, bottom third of field goal attempts, and bottom third of three-point attempts. This year, they are 11th in points scored. And why is field goal attempts important? Because that tells you how quickly they are getting down the floor and trying to play the pace that they want to play. They are 9th in field goal attempts, 3rd in three-point attempts. You may not like it. Now, the ratings were good on opening night, so somebody likes it. Ultimately, they should be. The question is, are you beating them year over year over year? You can hear the Bulls right here on 6-7 of the score. Coming up next, there is a very popular offensive coordinator that is out there, not only for the Chicago Bears, but maybe for everybody. He has commented a little bit on his interest of being a head coach. And did you hear what Patrick Manley said on the station that may be the most concerning thing for the Bears moving forward? That's coming up next on 6-7 of the score.
We're back with more Judson Richards on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Again, this was my first go-around on The Score tonight. I just want to say thanks again for the opportunity. So great to be on in the city of Chicago. Great to be on a station the caliber of 670 The Score. Thanks to Mitch Rosen, Ryan Porth, Alex Kuhn on the other side of the glass, doing a great job keeping me anchored, producing the show as well. It is an interesting time to be covering the Bears. Why? Well, because I'm a big believer in number 18 in Caleb Williams, just 8 games into his NFL career. So there should be some patience along with how things are going for him. But then you also have a head coach at times that looks like he is in over his head. You certainly look like you have an offensive coordinator who is in over his head, and then you have a general manager in Ryan Poles that has done a great job, it feels like, except for the position that he plays when it comes to actually building an offensive line. We will start to turn the page to this Patriots game on Sunday. Pats are just 2-7. Bears are 4-4. This will be their last chance to get right before they get started with that gauntlet of the NFC North, including the Green Bay Packers. It will be Packers week coming up next week as well. But how bad are things for the Bears? Well, you heard Olin Krutz in the postgame on 6-7 of the score that it looked like a team that had lost the locker room. And Patrick Manley, who was also part of that postgame show, but he was on Bernstein, Harris, and Rahimi today, and he had a chance again to go over that film, and this is what he said it looked like to him.
The opening kickoff of the game was a touchback, right? Number 45, amen, whatever his name, I forgot the linebacker that came over from the Chargers. He doesn't take a step off the line of scrimmage. Everybody else kind of covers a little bit. You know, they know it's a touchback. But that, to me, screamed. I'm like, wait a minute. You're not giving any effort whatsoever? And I do have a little bit of a problem with the DJ Moore stepping out of bounds and going to the bench and then coming back in the next play and running a go pattern out of the slot. Like, if you step out of bounds in that position and you're a great teammate, wouldn't you want to turn around and see what Caleb's going to do? I know he said he was a little gimpy, but you also came in the next play and you ran a go route for the very next play. So what I see on tape is guys just not giving the full effort, and that's when I start seeing the crack in it. That's what I'm starting to see. Yes, and that's what's scaring me a little bit. And those are just two examples. And the opening kickoff is just, obviously I put a little extra eye on special teams. And I'm like, wait a minute, you're the only one out there not taking a step. If I'm Richard Hightower, I'm getting all over his butt. And I talked to some other special teams coaches around the league, and they said that's kind of unacceptable. You can't have that. There's other things you can do by running down the field, setting up blocks for later returns, but that's just examples of effort that I'm not seeing. Like, just the DJ Moore just struck me wrong that he didn't even turn around and want to watch the play. That's tapping out a little bit as a teammate. That if I'm in that room, I'm like, come on, DJ, what are you doing, man? You got 10 other guys running around trying to get a first down, catch a ball. I understand what you're doing. What he did was smart to step out of bounds because he takes himself out of the play. If you go to the Patriots game, sorry, I keep going long. The Patriots game last week, Hunter Henry, when they scored the touchdown to tie the game, he stepped out of bounds. So what did he do? He backed out of the end zone so Drake May knew not to throw to him. So what DJ Moore did, I think, is correct. But as far as body language, that's what concerns me.
We know we've heard about DJ Moore and body language this season.
I know, and that's just concerning because everybody I've talked to, the coach for him, played with him, has said he's just a tremendous teammate. And that's what scares me. When you hear a tremendous teammate showing you a little bit of the crack there, that scares me.
You know, the big three that we covered, and that was great stuff from Patrick Manley, and you don't necessarily need to break down a ton of film if you just, you know, if you looked at the score, oftentimes enthusiasm tells you so much with the way that the Cardinals look ready to play and the Bears did not. But football is so different than the big three that we discuss the most, right? There is no coach that will ask more of its players than a football player. You send a player to the plate, they're not going to get their head beat in, right? You tell a basketball player, especially with the way the game is now, they're probably just going to end up firing up threes from around the perimeter. When you play the game of football, a coach is asking you to give up your body. And so when someone says it looks like he has lost a locker room, basically when a football player shuts you off, and you'd like to think that there is more pride in it, right? And it shouldn't matter to the coach. But again, football is so drastically different that it is a game of physicality. It is a game of will. And so when it looks like you do not have the will, then that means that you just do not have interest in doing what your coaches are asking you to do. Again, you got to look in the mirror. But we see it happen all the time. Sometimes you see it with individual players, and then sometimes it just tends to engulf an entire team. And that's what you saw against the Cardinals. The Cardinals simply had more will than the Bears did, right? The Cardinals sacked Caleb Williams on three consecutive plays. Three consecutive. They did not have more than three sacks in a game the entire season. When statistics are as overwhelming as they are on one team versus another, then you know that one team just has more will than you do. They want it more. Hence, you end up saying things like and seeing things like, it looks like a team or it looks like a coach has lost the locker, right? Lost the locker room. That's what it sounds like to me. Ben Johnson, the offensive coordinator of the Detroit Lions, the OC, leading the best offense perhaps in football. This is what he said recently at the podium.
I love play calling. And so I would, if I took a head coaching job, would want to be a play calling head coach.
There you have it. I mean, how about that, right? Your team
short
is...
Short and sweet.
Yeah, short and to the point. And again, there is no way that I could see the Bears fire another offensive coordinator and allow Matt Eberflus to hire another OC. So if you want to go and get the best offensive coordinator, Because what Ben Johnson just said, what Ben Johnson is saying is, I will happily be your offensive coordinator. You're going to pay me like a head coach. Right now, the Bears are paying a very good defensive coordinator who is not a good head coach. And if Ryan Poles' entire career is based around how successful Caleb Williams is, then he needs to go get the best offensive coordinator. Hence, you are paying him to be your next head coach, because that OC is going to get the most amount of money. Just like, I think Cliff Kingsbury is probably going to be the next head coach because someone wants him to be their offensive coordinator. That's the way it's going to go. Alex, thank you so much. Again, you missed anything throughout the show, download the Odyssey app. This was a ton of fun. If you missed it, we spoke with Patrick Finley, Chicago Sun-Times, earlier today. Also spoke with Evan Washburn, who had the sideline call for CBS, and spoke with Mark Grant as well about the hiring of Will Venable. Coming up next, BetQL right here on 670 The Score.